Where do you see your career in 10 years? What are you doing now to help you get there? The sooner you start enhancing your skills, the sooner you'll be ready. That's why AARP has reskilling courses in a variety of categories like marketing and management to help your income live as long as you do.
That's right. AARP has a bevy of free skill building courses for you to choose from because the steps that you choose to take today will help you to love what you do in the future. And that's why the younger you are, the more you need AARP. Learn more at aarp.org/skills. In recent weeks, we've really focused on some ways that listeners can boost their income. So whether that's through starting your own side business and growing your network like Hala talked about, or when we talked with local realtor Alan about diving into investing in real estate, well, what better way to test the waters? While you are away, your home could also earn extra income.
That's right. Your empty space could be an Airbnb while you're traveling, because that's all you need to become an Airbnb host. It's a lot easier than you think, and you don't need to Airbnb your entire house. You could just host your extra spare room. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Supercharge your work decks with AI-powered Canva presentations. All you do is start with a prompt. You describe your presentation in a few words, and Canva presentations will generate captivating slides that you can then customize in seconds.
Canva presentations are designed for every workplace and every department. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva presentations can generate any deck you want for work. Sales decks, marketing presentations, onboarding plans, you name it. Any department can save time on any presentation with AI.
Generate slides in seconds with Canva presentations at canva.com. Designed for work.
Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're talking the wealth effect, Christmas returns, and BNPL IRL.
Yeah, and by the way, everyone, say a prayer for Joel, because, dude, it sounds like you've got something nasty over there. I think your voice is gonna hold up for us.
Let's hope so.
No, this is our Friday flight, and yeah, BNPL, IRL, we'll explain what all that means later on if you're not privy to the fact. But Joel, I got a quick frugal or cheap for you. So the other day, I took a jar of pennies to our local Kroger, and because I was like, you know what? We've had this jar sitting around for forever. I'd actually sorted them out from like the quarters and stuff that we pay our kids allowance with sometimes for their different jobs. And so I finally took it to the grocery store, and I was getting ready to dump it in the Coinstar. And I thought, wait a minute, I don't want to pay this company a cut.
Right.
For the change that, that I have on hand.
What do they charge, like 8%?
It's like 10 or 11%. And I thought, man, forget that. And so
I think that it's unless you opt for a gift card instead.
Oh, is it? I didn't look that hard at it. But regardless, we needed a few grocery items. So I thought, you know what I'll buy some milk, some eggs, get some bananas, and I'll pay for it using pennies at the register. I'm not going to put the burden on the cashier. I was going to go through the self-checkout because they've got like a little cup, to kind of make it easy. So in my mind, it's like a self-administered, like a manual Coinstar where I get to reap all the benefit from it. Here's the downside. It didn't really have what I envisioned. I thought there was like a little bowl for you just to kind of like drop all the change in. No, I had to kind of like take stacks of pennies and run them across this little slot for them to fall down. And it kept getting jammed. And no joke, it took me like at least 10 extra minutes to pay for my purchase with the pennies. And when I actually did the math, I'm like, wait a minute, I saved like $1 plus just gave myself a massive amount of headache. And so I'm curious, Joel, what are your thoughts? Was this frugal or cheap?
Sounds cheap, Matt. I think you answered your own question.
A majorly cheap move on
wasted time and effort.
It was like a minute in, and I'm like, what am I doing? This is so dumb. But at the same time, what are you gonna do with all these pennies? Like, you've got them on hand and you're gonna throw it away? Like, it's literally money, but pennies, man, they're literally worth less than what it costs to actually make a penny. No, it costs like 3 cents
to make
a penny.
The penny should be abolished. We all know that. It's just no one's had the fortitude to stand up to Big Penny to kick him out. But yeah, they got
a strong lobby.
That's right.
The Penny lobby.
Maybe next time, check out the Coinstar machine and see if you can get, I think usually you can get like an Amazon gift card.
Is that on all
and
of them?
Then, I think so. And then you don't pay anything.
Dude, we use Amazon, that's for sure.
Yeah. So that'd be a better way to go.
Damn.
Because that sounds like a stressful situation.
It sucked.
Yeah. Not worth
it. The jamming, and then there's somebody there who was like trying to get it unjammed. I just felt bad for them.
Yeah.
Too. I'm just like, I'm sorry. I'm wasting all of our time here. And yeah, don't be like me.
Yeah. I'm sure they were like, this guy sucks. Hope he doesn't come back.
Bet this guy has a money podcast.
That's right. That's right. All right, Matt, let's move on. Let's get to the Friday flight, a sampling of stories we found interesting this week. And let's talk about 401ks for a second. There's another reason to not look at your 401k statement. Not because it's down and you're tempted to fiddle with your investments. It's because your 401k is up and you might be tempted to spend more money because of it, right? Not even by taking money out of your tax-advantaged account either. The truth is, if you invested mostly in stocks, you likely saw your portfolio balloon by 20% or more in 2023.
Sure.
Which feels good. And there is no reason it shouldn't put a smile on your face. But there's something you need to watch out for. It's called the wealth effect. It's a behavioral economics term, which means that folks tend to spend more as the value of their investments goes up. Even if they don't have liquid access to the gains, it can lead you to think, oh, I got more money to spend, even though you don't really.
Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, you feel rich. Yeah, just because your investments go up in value don't mean that you've got more discretionary income. You've got more long-term income to spend off in the future, but this isn't money that you want to touch right now. And if you take this like too far, the wealth effect can result in taking on debt because of that perceived growth in your net worth. Well, it's not perceived. Like your net worth is going up, but that does not have an impact on what you have now. You know, the same thing happens for a lot of folks, by the way, when their home value increases. Just because you bought a house back in 2019 and it's now worth 50% more than what it is that you paid for, that doesn't mean you should start spending like there's no tomorrow. And simultaneously, we're not saying that you shouldn't enjoy your money, but just be cognizant of this potential brain wiring issue that's just lurking beneath the surface that might prompt you to spend in ways that you wouldn't have, let's say, after 2022 when the market was down. Think about how you felt back then, not how you feel right now after seeing the market do well last year. We are still trying to build wealth over the long haul in a healthy and sustainable way.
Yep. And I think, Matt, it's just important to be aware of our behavioral tendencies, and this is one of them. All right, let's talk about student loans for a second. Student loans were such a regular part of our show during the pandemic and as the new SAVE plan was rolling out. And we haven't really talked about them much since the payments restarted back in the fall, though. And economists, they were worried about the payment restart. They thought that it was going to kind of lead to some tightening in the economy. But oddly enough, we just haven't seen it play out like that. Why? It could be that folks who truly can't afford that student loan payment simply aren't paying. And so something like 4 in 10 borrowers haven't paid anything since the payment restart happened in October. So should you pay your student loan bill? We would say if you can afford to pay on it, yes. But also know that even though payments have restarted, there are still many months left where not paying on your loans is not going to get you into trouble. It's what's known as like this on-ramp time frame. And so this coming fall is when people are going to actually be held accountable for not paying their student loans.
That's when it's going to be reported to the credit bureaus.
That's right.
That's when that'll resume.
So if you have to prioritize other financial goals for the time being, don't feel bad about doing so. But it was interesting to see, I think, that such a large segment of people are not paying on their student loans still. But I guess I'm also not surprised either.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I think what's key is sort of what you said, which is that like, hey, this is debt that you took on. So it is, even though it's not necessarily that it totally isn't being reported right now to the credit bureaus, that doesn't necessarily mean that you don't owe it. But the good news is down the road, it is going to be dropping from 10% of your discretionary income down to 5%. So that's some relief that you can look forward to next summer. And by the way, if maybe you've got a more complicated situation and you need some help figuring out how to proceed with your student loans, this might be an instance where you might want to reach out to a pro over at Student Loan Planner. We've actually got an article over on the website that'll help you to understand whether or not you're a good candidate to consider going with somebody who can kind of walk you through a more complicated student loan repayment process.
And it makes more sense for people who have higher amounts of student loan debt. yet, right? So if you're one of those folks who's like, I don't have like 10 grand, I've got like 50 or 60 grand, then it might make sense to talk to a pro.
As well as those like more complicated income-driven repayment plans.
Yeah.
If you're trying to qualify and you're not sure what counts, those are all similar situations that, that might require a professional. But on the note of student loans, on the note of paying for college, one new perk of the Secure Act 2.0, it actually went live this week. You can now officially roll 529 money into a Roth IRA. So back before this law passed, neither of us were really excited about 529 plans. There were just so many other routes that you should take before saving specifically for your kid's college. The example we would always give is like, make sure that you're putting your own oxygen mask on before you're trying to help your kid or help those around you. Basically, there is a financial order of operations. We called it the money gears. We'll make sure to link to that in our show notes as well.
Yeah, and the 529 plan just falls way down on the list.
Yes, exactly. And that's still true. But with this added flexibility, a significant chunk of money that you do funnel into a 529 account for your kids, it can actually be rolled into a Roth IRA for their retirement years. It's supposed to basically be a relief for folks who just oversaved, who overdid it on the saving for college front. But crafty listeners out there can use this sort of think of it almost as like a loophole to start helping your kids to invest for decades down the road, even earlier, in particular, if they don't end up using those dollars for higher education. And we've actually got a new article up on the site, and you can go there for all the nuance and all the particulars that you need to keep in mind.
There's a lot of detail. There's a 5-year rule. There's
the
a 15-year
aging process.
Rule.
Yeah. You got to age this money, man.
That's right.
It's like a fine cheese.
So even though you can do it starting this year, there are a lot of people who won't be ready to do it this year. But it is definitely, it makes 529 plans look a whole lot more attractive because they have greater flexibility now.
Mm-hmm.
And Matt, on the note of school, the FAFSA launch, did you see that?
Woohoo!
Yeah, except for it basically just made people angry. It was just the worst launch of all time. And so I guess we had Tina, the FAFSA guru, on the show.
Tina Steele.
Yeah, a couple months ago. And we were talking about, this new shorter FAFSA is going to make it easier for a lot of people.
It should be a breeze.
It should be great.
That's what we were promised. Not from her, but from the higher ups.
Well, and the government had 3 years to get this right, and they still botched it. So hopefully they're going to get the kinks worked out. We'll report back. But yes, you can technically fill out the this now shortened FAFSA form now.
You can try to.
Yeah, but I would just say don't pull your hair out. Don't go crazy. Just wait a few weeks. They'll get things sorted out.
Totally. All right, dude, let's talk about Christmas returns, because now that the dust has settled from Christmas and the holidays, it's about time to start making some of those returns. Listener Mackenzie, she actually emailed us, and she sold a few of her own wanted gift cards via, I think she specifically used cardcash.com. So if you're listening, if you've got some gift cards that you don't love, don't let them get buried in the bottom of your junk drawer until they expire or get accidentally thrown away. Get rid of them.
Until inflation just erodes their value over time.
Yes, exactly. Unload those things and turn those gift cards into actual dollars that you can spend today on things that you might value a little more. And if it's actual physical goods that you received that you don't plan on keeping, make a plan to do those returns soon. And although it's going to be easier to do an online return and just mail those items back, know that it's likely going to cost you more if you're wanting to go that route and just drop it off at the UPS store or wherever it is that you make returns.
Yeah.
Instead, consider returning in store, because that's going to help you to avoid those quote-unquote return or restocking charges that are becoming more and more popular, let alone, not to mention the actual shipping costs, if that's something that you have to pay for. But while you might have until the end of the month to make returns at some of the stores, other Christmas return policies actually end mid-month, so make sure that you are reading the fine details.
Yeah, make a plan this weekend to go make those returns. And you're right, Matt. I mean, like, just those return policies are getting more stringent. It makes sense, because it costs the retailers meaningful amounts of money to process those returns. Shipping's not free. It wasn't free when it got sent to you, and it's not free when you send it back to them. So I'm not mad about the fact that they're charging for that, but people need to be aware of that, because it might change how they decide to make their return. All right, we've got more to get to on this episode, including can you lease a used car? Turns out you might be able to pretty soon. We'll get to that and more right after this.
When it comes to financial advice, you got to trust the source. It's why you listen to this podcast. And if you're looking to upgrade your wallet, you need to turn to NerdWallet. Their expert team of nerds dives into the details to help you find smarter financial products. If you're paying for vacations with whatever card is in your wallet, you could be missing out on miles you didn't even know you were leaving on the table.
You can get a new card with more miles and more upgrades. What could future you do with more travel rewards? A hotel upgrade, lounge access? Wherever you go next, make it happen with a smarter travel credit card. Don't wait to make smart financial decisions.
Compare and find smarter credit cards, savings accounts, and more today at nerdwallet.com. As with all cards, credit is subject to lender approval and terms apply. NerdWallet, finance smarter.
I'm guessing that a lot of listeners are starting to solidify their summer travel plans. We always like to get the families together, Matt, for a week at the beach. Every single summer, we've already got that trip to St. Simon's on the calendar. Pumped for that. But sometimes those vacations get expensive. So what better way to offset some of those costs than to have your home earning some money while you're away?
That's right. Why let it sit empty when it could be earning extra income? It's the financially smart thing to do. So think it through. Maybe you've got some extra space in your home, or maybe you have an entire house to host, or maybe you're just going on vacation and your home is sitting empty. In every case, you can Airbnb it. You already have the space, so it won't be a huge adjustment.
I mean, the way I see it, if you're not using your space, you have two options. You can let it just sit there empty, or you do some optimizing and make some money off it. Really, if you think about it, you already have an Airbnb. You just need to start using it. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Let's say you've been listening to the podcast and now you're finally ready to start implementing some of the financial morsels that we're dishing up. Maybe you are trying to save up some more money for a down payment on a house, or maybe there's a big vacation that you have been dying to take. Well, the money app Monarch, they make it so easy to help you to reach your financial goals. That's why the Wall Street Journal, they named it the best app for growing your savings.
Monarch is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. Create custom budgets, track progress toward financial goals, collaborate with your partner even. And now get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. And you won't get spammed either. Monarch features ad-free privacy you can trust. They will never sell your data to third parties or show you ads.
That's right, man. And after trying out Monarch for myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. It just makes sense. It works. And right now, listeners of this show will get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. That's monarchmoney.com/howtomoney. For your extended 30-day free trial, go to monarchmoney.com/howtomoney for an extended 30-day free trial. All right, we're back from the break. Let's keep this Friday flight train rolling. And Joel, of course, you know that is now time for our ludicrous headline of the week. This one is from the Journal, Wall Street Journal. And the headline reads, "The new fitness gadgets that promise to change your life." Which is, it's kind of fun because you and I both have gotten more into fitness recently. So I think we were both like, ooh, let's see what's out there. It's funny, specifically because some of the things that they're highlighting, like the gadgets, they're silly and they're crazy expensive. These different pieces of technology that are finding their way into our lives, these different products that are hitting the market. So for instance, there is one that was like a sweat loss tracker. Another product that they mentioned were adjustable compression leggings.
Yeah, that one, the one level of compression. Sorry, it's not doing it anymore. You need to be able to, it's kind of like those Reebok pumps. You need to change it.
Dial it up a little bit. And there was also this like $6,000 stationary bike that vibrates. It's supposedly meant to mimic bicycling down a cobblestone street, you know, to get that real life experience
like you wanted to at home when you're getting a workout.
It's ridiculous. I certainly plan to continue to exercise more in 2024, or at least maintaining what I did last year, but I don't plan on purchasing any of these items that purport to help me. I think there's nothing wrong, let's say, with buying a normal, used, perhaps stationary bike to have at home, or paying to join a gym that you pay a monthly fee for. But if you go too far down the gear rabbit hole, I think you might find yourself with less cash on hand. And simultaneously, you may not be any closer to being fit.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of those gadgets were just kind of ridiculous. There was one, it almost looked like an ab roller, but it was like $750. They claimed to be a total body workout. And I'm like, how is that possible? And so, yeah, it just thinking that the new fitness item is what's going to help you get in shape. No. It's about you and actually following through and finding a fitness regimen that you can keep doing through thick and through thin throughout the year.
Sure.
It's not about getting the right gadget. And Matt, this is one of those instances where we see some parallels between physical health and financial health. We're oftentimes looking for the easy button that's going to provide us with all the results.
Oh, yeah.
But without all the effort, right? I mean, that's if you were to boil it down, that's what I want. But it just, that's not how life works. And we want to see that progress in a fraction of the time that's actually necessary to build up a durable, healthy foundation. So just like we're tempted to buy gadgets to get healthy, we also might be tempted into thinking that joining an investing club or socking money into cryptocurrency is the ticket to building wealth. It's like, hey, listen, I don't have time to wait for 10% annualized compounding returns in the S&P, I got to strike it rich much more quickly. I got to take bigger risks. Well, that's going to lead to heartache for most people. And someone might look at last year's S&P 500 and they think, wow, dang, I just missed out on 24% returns. But those returns didn't happen on December 31st. They took place over the 365 previous days that slow and steady investors kept at it, regardless of what the market was doing. There's no easy button.
Yeah, we can be so obsessed and fixated on the end result as opposed to knowing like the process that it takes to get there, right? Like the hours and days of sweat and denying yourself dessert or you know, when it comes to physical fitness, but when it comes to investing, sacrifice that's involved with saying no to purchases and socking that money away into those tax advantage retirement accounts.
Small things like, hey, literally, what if it's a new year? You go into your 401k, the back end of your 401k, and you increase your contributions by 1%.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you're at 7%, maybe you're at 4% right now, but if you increase it by 1%, it seems like a small move. But it ends up being a really big move that's going to help you out and help you just build more wealth in the coming months and years. And if you are kind of new to investing, we have a beginner's guide of how to invest. We'll link to that article in our show notes. Matt, let's talk about cars for a second. We've always said, you and I have always said, that leasing a car is like lighting money on fire. Like it's just a horrible idea.
Yeah, pretty much.
I don't like money on fire and I don't lease cars. but what if you could lease a used car? Would that be better? Maybe. Honda and Acura, it turns out, are going down this path of leasing gently used, certified pre-owned cars for less money in order to lure in younger drivers. I kind of sort of like it because leasing a four-year-old Honda that's in great shape is a better financial move than leasing a brand new Honda Accord or Civic or something like that.
Yeah, it's a better option than leasing something brand new because like basically what a lease is you are paying for depreciation. And when you have a brand new vehicle, guess what? Those are the vehicles that depreciate the fastest.
Yes.
So like, is it a car depreciates 50% within the first 5 years, 10% just from driving it off the lot and the remaining 40% basically over the next 4 years, I guess.
Yeah.
But just keep that in mind. While it's not our favorite thing, it is better than leasing a brand new vehicle.
Yeah, for sure.
And because the payments, I mean, they're going to be a lot more reasonable, I guess, is what I'm saying, than leasing something that's completely brand new.
Oh yeah. No, it's going to, it's
a lot of shades of gray here.
Massively, massively trim that monthly amount that you have to pay to Honda and Acura. But just like we always say, Matt, better yet, go ahead and just buy the four-year-old car and drive it for a decade. That's going to save you a lot more over the years than leasing, even if you're leasing used. So I kind of like that leasing used cars is going to become a thing. And I'm curious to see how it plays out. But I think even for How to Money listeners, while it's a less egregious money mistake than leasing a brand new car, it's still not the optimal move.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a better option. It is not the best option. Owning is still going to be better than leasing, I think, like 99% of the time. But one other model that's gaining steam, and maybe it'll be the future, doesn't involve ownership either, but it's about having flexible access to transportation. So we've seen car sharing sites like Zipcar. That's certainly made a difference in the market. Turo, they have as well. But these resources are great because they can help you to ditch a car from your life completely, but then you still have access to a car when you need one or whenever you want one. So yeah, leasing is going to be more flexible, but these other non-ownership models are even, honestly, I think more flexible. But bottom line, it's a great goal to try and own fewer depreciating assets. And it also makes me think of even just bicycling, because guess what? That's also a depreciating asset, but it's vastly more affordable to own a bicycle. And I know you can't bike everywhere.
Well, the depreciation hit from buying a $50,000 car or a $500 bike is vastly different.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
It's kind of like apples and oranges.
Yeah. Or something even more stark, right? But like, yeah, we've talked about this, and maybe we'll link to this episode in the show notes. We've talked about trying to get rid of a car from your life, and especially for two-car households, and there's more work from home happening and stuff like that. Just add up all the costs of this car and think, could I, if I did some rideshare, a little bit of Zipcar, a little bit of Turo, could we have just one car maybe in our garage, one car in our possession? And that way we're not taking the depreciation hit on two cars simultaneously. It's at least worth looking into, and I think it's a goal that a whole lot of people can accomplish. It's gonna bring thousands and thousands of dollars back into your life every single year.
Exactly. Yeah. Dude, so this makes me think. I know I talked about using Turo to rent a Tesla, and I shared like the electric car versus gasoline numbers, because I crunched those numbers, but I don't think I talked about the actual Turo experience. This is last year when Kate and I were out in Colorado, but it was actually pretty dang good. And here's the thing. We actually there was a hiccup, which is when we landed at the airport, I turned my phone off airplane mode or whatever, and the car that we were supposed to be receiving from Turo, it hadn't been returned yet, and so wasn't going to be available. But somebody from Turo called me and was like, hey, we've got another car for you. You just have to approve it. I was like, okay, sounds great. Same price. It was a nicer Tesla. The downside, though, is that we had to wait around like an extra 30 minutes because they needed to deliver it to the airport.
Gotcha.
As opposed to, had we just gone with a standard rental car, of course, they would have just given us any old car that's in their fleet that's already there. So, slightly more customized experience, but just know perhaps there might be some flexibility required of you. It's not unlike, honestly, renting from Airbnb, right? Like, you get a unique place, something that's more customizable to what it is you're looking for, but you're not going to have countless rooms to choose from at a hotel were your Airbnb for some reason not to be available for you.
Yeah.
But overall, just a good experience. We're definitely going to check it out again in the future.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about buy now, pay later for a second, Matt. Because
let's do it.
Until now, it's been something you're only able to do online. But that just changed this past week. You can now buy now, pay later in real life,
mm-hmm.
which
in
is
the flesh.
Just freaking crazy to me. If you head to a self-checkout lane at Walmart, now you can opt to pay for your purchases via multiple installments. Supposedly, you can't do this with groceries, they said, by the way, which is good news,
because mm-hmm.
That would have worried me. But most other stuff you can purchase at Walmart, up to $4,000, I think, in order, can be paid off over time. And American shoppers, they're just so quickly getting used to Affirm, Klarna, and Afterpay, and they're starting to think of buy now, pay later as a normal way to pay. The adoption has been like rapid on buy now, pay later. But gosh, this is not a normal way to pay. It's super weird. And the fact that, now we're normalizing buy now, pay later even more, that you can use it in the store, in the physical store. I don't like that you can use it online. I don't like that you can do it for buying airplane tickets. I don't like that you can do it for anything. But it's the buy now, pay later thing's only getting worse.
Yeah. You're basically stealing from future you in order to satisfy present day you that wants your stuff,
right?
That wants your goods. And it is weird, but it is definitely becoming more widespread. A quarter of Americans have used it to pay for something at this point. And these services, they're just gaining steam. And there's a reason that retailers are jumping on the bandwagon that they're offering the service. It's because shoppers tend to buy more when they can buy now, pay later.
This is the whole selling point that Affirm, Klarna, and Afterpay mm-hmm. give to the retailers.
Their sales,
they say, listen,
or higher.
You're going to have bigger carts at checkout. People mm-hmm. are going to spend, instead of spending $60, they're going to spend $120.
Yeah, or $75.
Or $75. Yeah, but they're like, hey, this is, you're going to get more money by allowing us to partner with you and giving your customers access to these beautiful, wonderful buy now, pay later abilities.
Yeah. And at some point, though, the piper is going to have to be paid, right?
Yeah.
Like at some point, the bill quite literally is going to come due. And I think this is going to end up getting millions of folks into real trouble, because what they're doing is just front loading these purchases that they should have instead waited to make until they had saved up enough to actually be able to afford it. Essentially, it's kind of like a way of time travel with your money, right? Like, you are pulling these purchases from the future to present day, and you're just assuming that you're either going to have more money off in the future to pay this off, or you're assuming that you're going to have more discipline to actually stick with it, or you're assuming that maybe in the future I'm not going to want as much stuff, and so I'll be able to tomorrow pay for the things for today. But that's a That's a false assumption.
Yeah.
On all three of those accounts there, you likely, like, you're counting on the best case scenario happening, and that puts you behind the eight ball. And hate to see it.
Everything you see, 20 and 30 somethings who have started using Buy Now, Pay Later, it's become a crutch. Mm-hmm. They start using it regularly for all sorts of purchases, whether it's clothing, new electronics item, travel, whatever it is, and they think of this as normal now to pay for something in installments, and a lot of them are overdoing those purchases, buying things that they really truly can't afford.
That's right. All right, dude, let's talk about housing, because if you're hoping that falling interest rates might induce more inventory in the spring's housing market, you're not alone. We really could see more people willing to list their homes as rates get closer to 6%, because folks are saying, hey, at least it's not 8%. It's not like it was before. And one tactic that did make sense for some home buyers was to opt for an ARM, an adjustable rate mortgage.
Yeah, that's what I did, actually. The first time I've ever gotten an adjustable rate mortgage was when we bought our house 18 months ago.
But why did you opt for an ARM over that 30-year?
Because the difference in rate was significant.
Exactly, yeah. It only makes sense if you are getting a superior rate. But here's the thing. New data today, it shows that almost nobody is getting a better deal by opting for an ARM these days. So, you know, certainly can't hurt to ask. But keep in mind that a 30-year fixed rate, they are looking like the best option for most home buyers right now. That plus putting at least 20% down to avoid PMI, private mortgage insurance. Although we know that this is a tall ask, it's a tough requirement. It is what we want to steer folks toward.
Yeah, I think I was always, like, for a long time, Matt, just knee jerk against adjustable rate mortgages, and then I started to see the nuance, and I'm like, yeah, they can make sense at times, depending on the terms, depending on how long you're going to live in that home, and depending on the rate decrease you're able to get by going with an ARM instead of an adjustable rate. But you're right. Adjustable rate mortgages, because of the way mortgage rates flux and change, adjustable rate mortgages just aren't nearly as good of a deal as they were a year ago.
Exactly.
So fixed rate mortgages, again, top of the heap.
That's right.
But that's going to do it for this episode, Matt. We'll have show notes with links to some of the stuff that we mentioned on today's episode up on our website at howtomoney.com.
All right, man. Let's get out of here. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.
Upswell Marketing would like to remind you that when customers choose your small business, they're really choosing you. So focus on super serving your existing customers and let Upswell handle the pipeline generation of new leads and customers.
Upswell specializes in developing customized direct response campaigns and is now offering a no-obligation free assessment of your current marketing strategies.
Not to mention, new customers also receive 15% off their first order when they mention that they heard about Upswell on this podcast. For more information, visit upswellmarketing.com. That's upswellmarketing.com.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
When it comes to your finances, go for the credit card that's always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night.
Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. We're talking real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.